Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Going to take a look at your personal computer today as we visit with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Great to have him back. Thank you so much for listening in. Probably a few more tired people than normal, Pete.
I'm included, Larry.
Yeah, you sound like you're doing a lot of hollering during the game last night.
That was great. People I know in Green Bay are just... probably have the day off. The rest of the state doesn't, but Green Bay probably does.
Well, here we are.
It's our like a snow day to them.
Well, I think the Packers are coming back sometime today, too. Yeah. So there'll be a lot of people that'll will probably not be at work.
I was sitting there going, who could be MVP of this game? And with the amount of drop passes, the Packers should have won like probably three or four touchdowns. Yeah. But at least they won. It was a nail biter. Hats off to Aaron Rodgers for that great performance. That was just phenomenal.
It was phenomenal. And we're looking for a great performance out of you today. And when we turn to computers here. By the way, let me give the number. If you would like to join in, have a question for Pete about your computer or your software, call us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And, you know, there were some announcements came out, one from Microsoft, one from Apple. Maybe we can go over those.
Yeah, they're large companies, but, you know, sometimes some of the big ones just quietly do something. And I don't know if they're just kind of waiting to see how things, you know, progress with it, but... Microsoft released what they call Web Matrix, and if you go to Microsoft.com/web, I put the links at the bottom of my top 10 off of InfoStar.com, so if you go to the current top 10 or the archives for today's date, it's links 11 and 12, but they're for creating websites, and they're embracing some of the open source code projects that are going on out there, which I've referenced before in prior shows. So they're making it easier for people to create these really neat interactive websites. So it's called Web Matrix. And they did that about 3 weeks ago. And then Apple made a big splash with the fact that, you know, you got the iPhone, you got the iPad, and the app stores on both of those. So if you have Snow Leopard on the Mac, they made a download update available for the desktop feature of Snow Leopard, which now incorporates their app store for the Mac, which they made a big announcement out of that.
So that was a big splash.
But Microsoft just kind of threw out Web Matrix, and there it is.
There it is. Well, and
so if you do web stuff or if you're interested, just to give you an example, some of the web hosting companies also have embraced for a very long time the open source projects. So there are a lot of tools out there that make it easy for people to create a website and just go with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Linda in Shiocton has a question for you. So let's go to Linda. Hi, Linda.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a computer that is probably 9 or 10 years old, probably. It's a very old computer.
Okay.
And I would like to get a laptop computer. I don't do any business or anything more than research or kind of go through the internet just to see what's going on. But what is a good laptop computer where I'm not paying a whole lot of money for?
Well, cost-wise, it all depends in terms of costs. If you're looking at investing, let's say, plus or minus $500, you'll be looking at some kind of Windows laptop that's brand new. Manufacturers range from Acer, HP, Compaq, Levino, which is IBM, Dell. In terms of components that you should look for, Windows 7, whether it's home premium, or, you know, as high as their ultimate version, realistically, it runs in 2 gigs of RAM. depending upon the apps that you're running, 3 or 4 better. But most of those newer ones come standard with 3 or 4 gigs of RAM. So you'll probably be okay when you're looking at a laptop in that price range.
Okay.
The screen will probably be a 15-inch screen. For some people that look for desktop replacements, they want a larger screen, maybe 17 inches. But, you know, 15 is good for most. You know, most people enjoy that size. It's not like a distraction or anything. And you can change around the screen resolution. So if you want larger icons, you go 800 by 600 resolution versus something that will make the icons, which are smaller, which is 1024 by 768 or even more than that. So the higher those numbers go, the smaller the things appear on your screen. So you can play with those settings. You don't have to accept the factory defaults.
Okay.
The performance issues come in play when you use a dedicated card for graphics versus shared memory. So the less expensive laptops are going to have the shared memory. The more expensive laptops will actually have a dedicated card with its own RAM on it. That's where you start seeing laptops costing, $700 or more. Also, other features are things like Blu-ray discs, DVD, Blu-ray, versus just simply DVDs. So if you want to take it for traveling and you want to watch Blu-ray movies, you're going to need a Blu-ray player. If it's not an issue, then you don't
worry about it.
You look at that and say, okay, I don't need that, so that's going to save me some money. What other things? Hard drive. Realistic capacity of a hard drive, you'll probably see something like maybe a 320 gig hard drive, which is probably more than adequate for most people. If you're doing a lot of downloading of music or, you know, putting music on your system, videos, excuse me, pictures, starts eating up a lot of space. They have ones with 500 gig hard drives and larger. Spin rate on those, the higher performance drives will have typically 7,200 RPM. The lower ones will be 54. So that's where, you know, you see these little price differences. Higher performance notebooks have higher spin drives. SSD drives will drive the cost up. Those are solid-state drives, and typically the capacities start at, let's say, 64, 120, 160, and so forth. But the price of those are typically a lot more expensive than because they have no moving parts. They're solid state, but they're more reliable. But most people don't typically opt for that. Those are the things that start to drive the cost of the laptops up. Now, if you look at an Apple laptop, the entry level on those for, I think, like a MacBook Air or something, they're roughly around $1,000 and up. They're good, solid performers. Their laptop battery life is going to be longer than a typical Windows laptop. The screens are very nice. The operating system they both work well. Windows 7 and the Mac operating system both work well. As far as dealing with viruses and worms and things like that, I would say, you know, the Apple is going to be a safer bet. But the Windows 7 system works well, too.
Okay.
So, you know, it depends on how much you're willing to invest. Now, if, I don't know how old you are, but if you're a student or if you have kids or relatives and you want to get in on an Apple discount, I think it's roughly 10% that if you can, you know, prove somebody goes to school, you can get a 10% off of their retail price.
Oh, okay. Okay. And is it better to get a laptop directly from the dealer or from a electronics store?
I guess it depends on your comfort level. Personally, I have no problem buying something from an online retailer. For example, buy, and we've mentioned this for many years, buy.com and Tiger Direct, which I believe bought CompUSA. They are constantly pushing out specials every day, and I see laptops for, you know, $350, $400, $500 that work quite well.
Okay.
So you can go to those online retailers, and they sell name brand products. They sell HP, Compaq, IBM, Toshiba, Acer, and so forth. They sell TVs. They sell, you know, they're all of them sell everything. So
okay.
those are possibilities. You still save on sales tax, technically. Going to a local retailer, whether it's the big box shop or a local computer store, it becomes a matter of personal preference. If you feel like you're working with someone locally and you like them, you know, some people like that part. So, you know, I've been doing it for years. If you have a problem with it, you can call up, you can talk to the manufacturer, you can, some of these places. That's the other thing is the open box specials or the factory refurbs. Those come from returned items that are factory recertified. So the factory looks at it, redoes the drive, you know, maybe because someone was using it, got it returned. So now they discount it maybe $50, $100, $200 because they want to move it out. Box has been open, but the factory recertified it. So that's another way to save some money.
Yep.
Okay.
There you go. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. That's, I think, something a lot of people would benefit from.
Yep.
That good question.
Yeah, I'm not afraid of factory recertified. It basically means that someone returned an item, the factory, maybe they just reflashed the hard drive, you know.
Yeah.
And said, there you go.
Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our on-air producer here today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll take some more calls now about computers and software with our guest Peter Green. Eric and Eagle is up next. Let's go there. Hi, Eric.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I have a question here. I have a little problem. What my problem is this way. I travel a great deal for my job, and I travel from place to place. I need internet access. Okay, I've got a mobile one right now, but the problem is the house they gave me doesn't, I can't receive it here in Eagle. And I'm wondering, is there any way I can get onto an internet access, or what mobile type internet access covers the most area? Or better yet, if I go to these homes, is there some place where I get a plan that doesn't require 24-month commitment for my job?
Interesting. So what kind of service are you using right now?
I forgot what's the name of it. It's the green one. Begins with a C. I'm sorry.
Begins with a C?
Singular?
Yeah, singular.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're saying that you're not able to receive a signal from them?
At Eagle?
No, in certain spots. Uh-huh. It's not everywhere. In the major cities, I don't have any problem.
Right.
In Milwaukee, I don't have any problem. If I drive 15 minutes away in Mequonago, I get the signal.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not getting it here where they bought me this, where they rented me this house.
Huh. How about from your cell phone? Are you getting, do you use a smartphone?
No.
No.
I don't.
See, one of the ways that, I mean, personally, what I would be doing if I'm traveling, I would be using internet tethering from a smartphone to using, you know, to gain internet access rather than getting a separate card and a laptop. So what you do is you basically use a smartphone, a Droid. You can do it with a Droid. You can do it with an iPhone, but an iPhone, you either have to pay Apple or pay your service provider for the internet tethering feature, or you can do what they call, and the feds validated this last year. It was a big announcement because Apple said, no, people can't do this. It's a violation of their EULA end user licensing agreement. And the feds said, yeah, it's actually okay, and we're cool with it, and people can do it. So what you do is you jailbreak an iPhone, and then that allows internet tethering feature. So you use a smartphone like a Droid, and you do internet tethering. So whatever service provider you're using, you use your smartphone to bring in the internet signal, and you basically
Set up to my computer directly.
Right, and you basically create a mini internet Wi-Fi in which your laptop uses the wireless to connect to the internet through your phone.
Okay.
So you're creating your own mini hotspot, Wi-Fi hotspot. So your internet signal for your phone may actually be better than the internet signal that you're getting for your smart card.
Yeah.
And it's going to be less expensive in the long run because you're already paying for the internet on your smartphone. You're paying another hit for the internet coming through that card.
Yeah, it's getting my employer is saying the same thing.
Right.
The only problem that I guess I have with that is that how does that work for like large, because I'm an engineer and large files coming through the, I guess the question I was going to ask you is if you had to use a mobile provider, since my company provides that,
right,
which one would you pick?
Well, I'm using AT&T, but you got to look at your service area and see, you know, where your travels lead you. And what's going
to
be the
part where I'm going to? There's not a lot of service. Some of the places that, like I said, it's now Eagle. Madison has plenty of service.
Right.
Milwaukee has plenty of service.
Right.
All the cities do, but Eagle doesn't.
Right.
Yeah, you're going to have to take a look at the service maps.
See, I would see if you can find someone that's got a smartphone. There's an application called SpeedNet that you can download for your iPhone. You probably can download a similar one for a BlackBerry or any other kind of Droid device, which you would use as like a tricorder. You know, think of it like the Spock days, and you'd go around and say, okay, I'm using speed test to test my internet connection through my smartphone. So what you may want to do is acquire a smartphone and do some of your traveling and see, based on the service that you're using now with that application, to see what kind of internet you're getting through your smartphone for your travels.
Yeah.
Because you may be restricted, period, no matter where you go to some of these outlying areas, that you're only going to get like dial-up rate connection through your smartphone. In other words, you might only get 28 to like maybe the max 90K download speed for getting onto the internet because of where you are, versus traveling to a city you might in some spots get 2 meg.
Yeah.
So, but you don't know that until you do the testing with an application like Speed Test.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Eric. Appreciate your call. And Ann in Appleton, it's on to you now. Hi, Ann.
Hi, I am in the market for a new laptop. I've been using a PC for many years, and my husband uses a Mac, and he's almost convinced me to get a Mac. But I know there are some things I'm going to miss on the keyboard in particular, and that I just wondered if, do you know if Mac is ever going to change their keyboard so they have a backspace key and a page down key, stuff like that.
I understand what you're, you know, there are some little slight differences, but you know what? It's not going to be an issue.
I mean, you can backspace and down on a Mac. I mean, I do it.
All those normal keys are there.
In a little different spot, maybe.
Yeah, and there are some different shortcuts for doing things on a Mac versus a Windows shortcuts, but, you know,
I haven't learned them yet, but whenever I use my husband's computer, it's frustrating because I...
Yeah, the proximities are a little different, but I use both of them every day, and to be honest with you, to me, a keyboard's a keyboard. You just got to get used to what's in front of you, and you'll be fine. It's a matter of, you know, it goes back to when I did this show in 1985. You know, Larry asked me to be on it, and I remember going through and reading all these computer books before I was on the show because it was stuff that I was doing, and people wanted to get computers that never had computers. Now they have them. They have several of them. You always have to go back to the basics in anything that you do. What am I going to use it for? What are my goals and objectives of using the computer? Find the software that fits those needs, and then the hardware. So it boils down to, what are you going to use the computer for? What is the software that you use? Is it available for the Mac and for the PC? If it is, fine. Then what makes it run the best, so your experience on the computer is going to be optimized? And then find the hardware that fits those needs. So if you find software that you need to do stuff every day, or that's important to you, that is not available on one versus the other, your solution is pretty simple.
Yeah.
You know, you pick which one it works for. Then you pick how much can you invest in the hardware, and find the hardware that you're going to be happy with.
Yeah.
So if all the things that you can do work on a Mac, and you have the money to invest in a Mac versus a PC, take a look at it and make your decision.
Yeah. There you go.
Thank you.
Yep. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. I don't think she's convinced yet on those Macs, but...
You know, Larry, they're not... All computers are really, at its root level, appliances. Things do go wrong.
Yeah.
So, you know, make your backups. You know, don't forget about getting a backup component. Even for your smartphones, you know, back them up, because they do break. They have finite lives,
yes,
and they do fail.
Sally in Wayland, Minnesota, on to you. Hi, Sally.
Hello, Larry. Is it just me, or was that a great game last night?
That was a great game.
Was it a great game, man?
It almost got to the nail-biter stage.
I know.
It was like, okay, you guys are ahead. Don't. You know, just don't blow it. Yeah, it was
thought, you know, if we lose, we're going to deserve it. You know, I thought, wow. But we didn't. We got it. We pulled it out. So anyway, I called this show back in December to ask you guys what information you had on the iPad. And Jim wouldn't even let me on. He just said, get it. You'll love it. So he wouldn't even let me on the show. So I was really good last year, so Santa brought me an iPad.
Okay.
Now, my question is, I live out in the middle of nowhere.
Uh-huh.
I don't have a computer. I go to my parents' place for updates and to backup.
Okay.
So I don't have a computer. I don't have a printer. I don't have a scanner, because all that has to be Apple stuff anyway.
Right.
And then out here, I don't get cell phone coverage, so I can't use a cell phone to, like, get stuff in. I want to use this to promote my business. I want to put pictures out there on my website, so I need to take pictures of my greenhouse and
right.
my tomato plants and the latest coleus varieties and all that stuff. I need to get it to my website.
Right.
And the only way I can figure of doing this is to have my friend come out, who has a smartphone, so she can take pictures of my stuff, so she can email it to my iPad so that I can get it out there and onto my website. Now,
yeah.
Is there a better way of doing this?
Huh. I mean, that's a good creative solution
that's
to
good.
Do that.
Yeah.
You know, I've used iPads, and I really like it to have a camera, the next one, which is coming out in April, May, supposedly will, because that's a feature that I would really like to have instead of making those extra steps like what you're talking about. That's probably...
I can't think of a better way. If you have you have a digital camera?
I don't know.
You know, even using Bluetooth, but with high res pictures, boy, that would take a long. That
yeah.
could take a long time to.
Yeah, yeah, I think you got the right approach for now, Sally. Somebody else may call with a different idea, but I think for the moment.
Yeah.
That's it, huh?
Yeah, I think for the moment,
unless you can create a Wi-Fi hotspot, you know, and then you're doing it yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
What does Wi-Fi hotspot mean?
Well, okay, if you travel, I'll make it so that people can understand that if you go to Starbucks, they have what's called a Wi-Fi hotspot. So you sit there with a laptop and using your wireless, you can access the internet through Starbucks internet service.
I have wireless internet here.
Okay.
I get it coming through the telephone company.
Okay.
And I have wireless here.
All right.
But I still need to grab pictures somehow and get them to my website on my iPad.
Yeah, I would. So you. You know what you could use?
What?
They make a card that has Wi-Fi built into it, a memory card.
Okay.
It's for a camera.
Card with Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, that's what I'll get.
I forgot the exact trade name of it, but if you look for SD card Wi-Fi, I'm sure you'll come up with it when you do like a Google search.
Okay,
so they have a built-in Wi-Fi into a memory card that would allow you to probably transfer the files.
Okay, you said FD card? What's
SD. SD.
S is in Sam, yeah.
You know, the memory cards that they use in typical cameras.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
There you go. Good luck, Sally. Thank you for calling.
It's a little bit more costly, but it has Wi-Fi feature.
Yeah.
Which isn't. So that's another possibility.
Yeah. Dave in Cambridge. Hello to you.
Hi. I've got an Acer computer with XP Home Edition on it. And I don't know what the memory factor is, but it's an opportunity I have to get another 6 gigabyte memory slot fit, I guess it would fit in a slot on that computer. Will that make my computer run faster? And if there is already a memory thing in that slot, can I replace it? How do I replace it?
So you said, is it a laptop or a desktop system?
Desktop.
Desktop. So you're talking about, you said 6 gigabytes?
Well, I've got a 6 gigabyte hard drive that I can put in.
Oh, okay. All right. So you're saying, so you got a spare 6 gigabyte hard drive that you could add to it is what you're asking.
That's correct.
Okay. Typically, if it's a desktop, they usually have at least one, depending upon the size of the case, whether it's a tower or what they call a small form factor. They usually have at least room for one more hard drive.
It's a tower, yeah.
Yeah, towers usually have room for, I'd say maybe another four, at a minimum, four other devices. What becomes an issue is the cords or the cables inside, how many connections you have. Some of the manufacturers play games with how many they ship the cases with and also how many cords or cables that can reach the device safely from the system board to the actual device.
Okay.
So you have to be aware that, you could open up the case, you can slip in the drive, but the proximity of the drive and the cable that's in your system may not work.
Okay, but then can I get a different cable and that'll work?
So you may need, you may have to look at getting a different cable. So
okay,
that's a possibility.
It's not a big deal. Get another cable, is it?
How old is the computer?
Maybe 4 years.
Yeah, you shouldn't have a problem with getting one.
Okay. Will it make my computer run faster?
Will it make your computer run? Putting in another hard drive will not make your computer run faster. Putting in additional memory sticks or RAM that match what you have in your system will make it run better. So, do you have any idea how much RAM is in your computer?
I have 1 gigabyte on 2 sticks.
Okay.
No, I have two 1 gigabyte sticks.
Two 1 gigabyte sticks. So you have 2 gigabytes of RAM. That's probably pretty good for your system. You're probably going to get the best speed that you have right now with what you have.
Probably couldn't take anymore.
Have you made it as efficient as possible? Pete, you always talk about.
Yeah, some of the things that, do you have like a lot of icons in your lower right-hand corner of your screen?
Yeah.
A lot of little pictures?
Yeah.
You can probably safely turn off those. Not all of them. Some of them are for like antivirus solutions that you may have on your system. What I would recommend doing, I have some tips on my tips page at infostar.com, but you could also do a search on something like Windows XP Startup and look at the solutions that come up for how to configure your system so that you don't have all those little icons.
How do I get Windows XP Startup? Where do I look?
Go to Google, or if you use Bing or whatever your favorite search engine is, and type in Windows XP startup and look.
There's going to be 45 things to choose from.
Yeah, but you know, that's part of the journey, is to look through and read what people are doing to improve performance of those systems. I also have links on my tips page. So if you go to infostar.com, then click on tips and look for Windows startup, you'll find some links there too. It'll talk about that.
Do those startup things cost money to use?
No, what they're doing is they're occupying resources on your computer to basically reside on your system when you start it up. And you don't, since you're probably not using most of them, they're just eating away at your system's speed.
Yeah.
If I go to Google and I go to those things and they say Windows startup and they give me a selection of places to go, does it cost money to use those systems?
No, you don't want to be buying anything.
No. And
cool.
Cleaning cache, things like that?
Yeah, the other thing is if you haven't done any like file maintenance or system maintenance on your system, there's a program called CCleaner that I've had good success with.
It's free.
And it's free. There's a free version. You just have to read the screens and see where it says that it's free. And you can download it, and you can clear temporary internet files, and they've improved it so that it's almost like the cookies that you use that are popular, it doesn't get rid of because it knows that you're doing your online banking or whatever. But it'll clear a lot of things, and it also tidy up the registry for the system so that if you've got kind of like loose ends, it'll tidy those things up as well.
Be cleaner.
Yep.
Yeah. And then one other thing you usually do, what is it that something where you cut back from 10%?
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, because if you've got 6 gigabyte hard drives, you maybe run a little low on space. So a couple of things that you can do. One is, by default, the operating system takes up 10% of your hard drive space. So if you right mouse click on your recycle bin, click on properties, and then resize the drive to, let's say, 1% of your drive. That'll help. And then the other part is if you go into system restore, so the way to do that is click on start, then accessories and system tools, then system restore, and then go in there and change the system restore settings so that instead of it being a default of 12% of your hard drive space, make that 1% of your hard drive space. So between
the two of them, you've just made 20%.
A little bit more than 20% of your drive back. So that will probably help also speed up your system because you may have a storage problem with just 6 gigs of hard drive space.
This is all covered on Infostar.com, right?
Yeah, you'll have to do some hunting on that. The last two suggestions, I would probably say just re-listen to the show. You know I went through that stuff pretty fast, but I would probably just stream the show. You could probably go back to some of the other shows and stream it, and you'll find that too.
That's something that comes up pretty often on the shows,
It's, you could also do a search on, again, resizing your recycle bin. Windows XP will probably have the same thing.
Yeah.
And then changing Windows XP system restore settings would be the same thing.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck, Dave. Thank you for calling. And Larry in Eau Claire, on to you. Hi, Larry.
Good morning, fellas. Thanks for taking my call. My question is very similar to your previous caller. I've got about a 4-year-old desktop PC with a 1 gig of RAM and 40 gig hard drive. It's gotten to a point where it's running pretty slow. So I did some research on the web, downloaded some suggestions, many of the same that you had just talked about. Downloaded and did a number of those things. One of those things was suggested was to use a registry cleaner software. And what I did was I went to your InfoStar website and downloaded, I think it was called Easy Cleaner.
Yeah. Okay.
and downloaded that and ran that software, and it located quite a number of errors or bad registry keys, and also quite a number of duplicate files, it claimed. I went ahead and removed the registry errors, and when I removed the duplicate files, that really ended up messing up the computer, and wasn't quite sure why, what happened there. What I was able to do to get the computer to work again was, fortunately, my wastebasket was still full of what I had previously removed, and I was able to restore the system by restoring those files. But I guess my question is, what did I do wrong there that when I erased those duplicate files, it caused a problem for me?
Actually, I'm not quite sure what caused that.
If they were really duplicates,
yeah,
it shouldn't have caused a problem.
Yeah, unless it for some reason flagged all of them, so the duplicates and the originals
all went together.
Yeah,
yeah. It showed this error message, something to the effect that. Do you really want to change or erase this file?
Right.
Because or it senses an unrecognizable replacement file.
Hmm.
And I didn't quite know what I did
wrong. What was going on there? Yeah.
Yeah. Did you do these things in stages, or did you do them all in one fell swoop? Or
I did them in stages. Yeah,
uh-huh.
Yes. Things like on startup, reducing all those unnecessary programs mm-hmm. from starting up, and as you had mentioned to the earlier caller, slowing down the computer mm-hmm. that way.
Right. My only suggestion is to, you know, try and communicate with, you know, the creator of Easy Cleaner and see if, you know, if they have any idea what's going on with that.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It really doesn't.
I mean, occasionally I run across cases where people have problems with systems and they do things to, you know, do some file maintenance, but there's some other underlying problems that the system had that made it have performance issues before. So, it's what happens is all these computers are all different, and occasionally these file maintenance programs, if they have a hang up on something, it can create even more of a hang up. You know, or more of a headache instead of fixing one.
Yeah. Good luck, Larry. Thank you for calling. Coming up, Daniel will be talking about another solution for iPads and photos. Larry Mueller here with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll take some more calls, and let's turn to Daniel in Madison next. Daniel, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. I just wanted to start out by saying I love your show.
Thank you.
So I was listening to the lady talk about how her friend emailed her the photos on her iPad.
Yeah.
And I thought I heard your guest suggest a Wi-Fi type card reader. But I just wanted to let her know, if she's still listening, that Apple does make a iPad camera connection kit. It connects right into the bottom of the iPad, makes a USB port available there, and for any camera, it's not, you know, card specific. You just plug the USB cable into there, and it imports it into the iPad.
Oh,
that's good. Hopefully, they don't charge too much for it.
Yeah, I think it's like $29. Uh-huh. But no, we sell that down at our shop. But
you know, if the customer just wanted to see how it works, we have one that we can just take out no charge and just show her, you know, show how it works.
Yeah, the other solution I came up with is if you happen to have an iPhone and an iPad, you could download the app called Bump, and you could you could exchange photos that way.
Just by
bumping the two devices.
That's a good idea, too. Yeah, no, but thank you for having me on the show.
All right, thanks, Daniel.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. I think I've
It does have that one port on it.
Yeah.
The iPad and the iPhone. You know, it's got that one.
Yeah.
So
that's a pretty cheap.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty cheap way. Thanks, Dan. Gloria in Dodgeville, on to you. Hi.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Say, I'm so glad that you have this program. I don't know where you are, but I do have probably about 5 to 10 questions, but I'll limit mine to 2.
All right.
I'm looking at, I do tethering off of my cell phone.
Okay.
And I hook it up to my USB port or whatever, and the other end becomes, it's on my charger. And I'm looking at getting maybe an iPhone, and the iPhone would have the Wi-Fi, but I believe that I could actually do a hotspot on my Droid as well. Is that correct?
Correct.
That's the one that I'm using. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
Okay. Now, do I have to pay for that?
You know, every service provider is different. With AT&T, if you want to use their internet tethering through them and having your iPhone current, then the answer is yes. And they have a fee associated with that, and they have, you know, they limit the amount of internet tethering. If you have an iPhone and you're able to, quote-unquote, jailbreak it and add a Wi-Fi app, which I believe it's a one-time cost of like $20, you can do that, and then you're just using your internet tethering as part of your cell plan.
Right.
But, you know, if you abuse it, you know, they're going to find you out. I mean, you can't go gaga and crazy over it. And they do. They used to have unlimited internet access for AT&T, but they've changed their data plans. With the Droid tethering, from what I understand about that, depending upon how you update your Droid, is whether or not you're getting internet tethering feature available through Droid itself or through the cell phone provider.
Right, right.
So that's a choice that you have to make to do that.
Right. I just wondered if I could get more going through the hotspot, because the one what I'm doing with my tethering, it does pretty good. But what I can't, for some reason, when I use it through my TDS account or my email, it won't let me come through. I don't know. Is it because I have so much email? I can get anything else on it, but I can't get my email off of it.
Yeah, email is typically not large files, unless somebody's downloading and sending you photos. So there may be some setting issues, some security issues for, you know, with your settings for the internet tethering. But for example, if you have a hotspot that you've created with your cell phone, and so you put it on the counter, and then you have a Windows laptop or a Mac laptop or any kind of laptop, so you create this Wi-Fi hotspot and you give it an internet security code that you know, then you go into your Wi-Fi and you look and see what Wi-Fis are available. You click on the one that's coming from your hotspot, so you're not cabled up. You're doing this through your Wi-Fi wireless card that sees your hotspot. You put in your internet key, security key, to get in, and then you're making your link.
Yeah.
Okay. So did I get my internet key then? Did I get that through my provider?
You create that.
Oh, you create that.
Yeah,
okay,
so for example, on my iPhone, the application that I downloaded and installed on the iPhone, one of the features is, okay, name, give the Wi-Fi hotspot the SSID, give it a name, call it something. You know, call it my internet, call it, you know, your pet dog or cat, whatever you want to call it, and then put in a security key that you know, obviously, so that when you use your laptop to access that SSID, you're going to put in that same security code that's going to allow you to link up to your hotspot that you created.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah.
Okay, well, second question real quick is, if I need to do some or check out for my viruses on my laptop and, or Worm or whatever, is there anything free that I can download on the internet to do that, or do I have to buy a disk or
something that I've had good luck with in single user applications is AVG, which is available for free. So it's A as in Alvin, V as in Victor, G as in George. So you could do a search, and I think CNET is one of the more popular sites. You could actually go and see reviews on it, and they make it, you know, accessible. Microsoft also makes available what they call Microsoft Security Essentials. So that's another product that's good in a single user environment. When you get into network environments, you got to be careful about what you put on file servers, because these antivirus programs want to touch every single file that moves around and can really bog things down.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. An email from Roy. How does one decide between installing Windows 7 32-bit or 64-bit? Is the backup tool in Windows 7 better than Vista's? Or is a third-party software program better?
How much? Well, okay, 32-bit versus 64-bit. Great question. Why is it a great question? If you're buying hardware, if the 32-bit version is installed, the max that you can address for RAM in the computer is 4 gigs of RAM. So if you buy a 6-gig RAM computer or an 8-gig RAM computer, it better have the 64-bit installed, because it's going to recognize that extra memory. Otherwise, it won't if it's got the lower version. There is a lot more software that really supports the 32-bit, not the 64-bit. So it's a matter of preference in terms of what are you using the computer for.
Yeah.
Okay. What software that you find that fits that? Does it have a 64-bit version? And are you buying hardware that will take advantage of the 64? So that's a perfect example of what am I going to use it for, what fits my needs, and then find the hardware. So you can underbuy. You could be, you know, looking at something that has a 64-bit version of it available, but you're buying a 32-bit version of a computer and hardware, which means that you're getting less for what you really want. Yeah. You know, so that's a great question. Backing up the system, Microsoft has some backup features. The Windows 7, to me, Windows Vista should not have been released.
Yeah.
That was just a premature release of an operating
Forget
system.
Vista.
Windows 7 fixes a lot of issues with that. It's got better backup features. There are also some really excellent free programs out there. There's a program called Yadis, Y-A-D-I-S, which is a free backup program. It will even do file monitoring and file versions. So you can say, okay, I want to backup and have at least 3 versions of a file. So it will back up and keep separate versions for you. So there are those options.
And John emailed, I can't access Netflix.com. This is the only page on the internet that says, oops, you haven't enabled cookies. Then I try their directions how to fix this, but it doesn't work. Any suggestions?
I would probably, you know, this is a good lead in to always make sure that you have two, maybe even 3 browsers on your computer. You should have Internet Explorer, or if you've got Apple, Safari, Mozilla, Firefox, and Google Chrome, and see if you're getting the same issues with all the browsers. Sometimes it could be as simple setting as somehow something got put in an exclude, or it just seems to be having an issue. Using another browser allows you the flexibility to check and see what's going on.
Susan's been in Waukesha County, has been getting runtime errors. How does she get rid of runtime errors?
Runtime errors sounds like a script problem. Whether it's you know, a runtime error coming from Windows itself or from an application, there is a Windows system file checker for all the versions of Windows. If you go out there and you do a search, Google, Bing, Yahoo, whatever, yeah, for system file checker, would be a good way to check the integrity of your system files and see if that prevents that from happening or cleaning it up.
There we go. Peter, yep, Green of InfoStar of Madison, our guest today. He'll be with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. We're talking your personal computer today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Always when he comes by, we have lots of great questions. I know we'll be talking about laser. Somebody wants a recommendation for a laser. We can't, someone else can't copy large numbers of files, wondering why that is the case. How about voice-activated recorders? What about when your screen goes black for a second? Those are a few of the things that can happen. Peter's got a big grin on his face because he probably has some answers to all those questions, and he might have an answer for yours, too. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. We'll be back with Peter Green right after this quick look at the news. Stay with us. So happy to have you listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. And Pete, about this time every show that you're on, we have a top 10 list of great places to go.
Yep, and hopefully I can get through this without completely losing my voice. If you go to InfoStar.com, click on Current, you'll get today's top 10. Or if you go to the top 10 archives, scroll down to today's date, they're there too. First one is to find out about marine species, ocean conservation, research, and more. Called marinebio.org. Number two is if you're looking for new cars, this is a resource that will help you figure out what you're going to pay for one in your area, and it's called truecar.com. Number three, you know, the concussion issue, you know, we got football and hockey, got
soccer.
Star players out and stuff like that. There's someone that has created an education and communication resource from an athletic trainer's perspective, and it's called theconcussionblog.com. This next one, number four, is access to over 12 million images, vectors, and HD videos. Over 2.3 million professionals in the media and communications industry. It's called, I believe it's pronounced Fotolia, FOTOLIA.com. I know where they come up with these names. Maybe it's a foreign.
Could be.
You know, something from over in Europe. Number five shows nearly 6 million places to check out with satellite views, and it's called satelliteviews.net. Number six is to help with your personal finance, retirement topics. They've got online forums, and it's called money-talk.org. If you're new to Windows, this would be a good site to help you get through some support issues if you have any. It's an open discussion forum for technical support of Windows 7. It's called Windows 7, the number 7, forums.com.
Mm-hmm.
Number eight is by a guy named Phil Lempert, who also creates the Lempert Report, and it's called supermarketguru.com. And he's got the latest in food and health news, new product ratings, money-saving tips, recipes, you know, just videos and everything related to food. Number nine is a new book resource just came across, and it's called ISBNDB.com, and it's online. It's access to online database research tool of books with data from hundreds of libraries across the world, and they also have a book price comparison tool as well. Number 10 is called, I believe you pronounce it, Calypso, Q-L-I-P-S-O.com. And they acquired a company called Veo, V-E-O-H, in March of last year. But what it is a multi-user content sharing platform that lets users extend or enhance their real-life social lives online.
Ah.
So all the social networking tools got another push from another product.
Oh. Well, we have a caller. Sophie in Waukesha has been waiting to talk to you, so let's go there. Hi, Sophie. Thanks for calling.
Hi, you're welcome. Thank you for taking my call. I'm asking about the voice-activated recorder, and is there some specification I should look for? And can it fit? Is there a brand or any?
Okay.
Oh, we just lost her. Okay.
Well, voice activation, Dragon Talk or Dragon Speak has been a product that's been out for years, and that's something that, you know, you install on your computer. And you can train it with your voice, and it works with different applications. That's been around for a very long time. That's got to be probably 15 or more years that it's technology's been perfected. A number of different levels of the product, but basically it's probably within $100 price range. But microphones are going to make a difference in terms of quality. Uses up a lot of drive space. So if you're going to use voice to work with your computer, you're going to want to have a good amount of memory. You're going to want to have a good processor. You're going to want to have a lot of hard drive space. So it might be a little bit of an experimental thing when you get involved and started with it in terms of how it works with your present computer, which will over time dictate what you need for your next computer in terms of performance and storage and things like that. And then they make dedicated devices for voice, you know, recording and digitizing and then porting it over to the PC as well. So there are companies that make those dedicated devices too.
Thanks, Sophie.
Good place to do research on that topic is CNET.com, and check out their review site. There's also a review site that where they review the products and give you feedback and what their editors think of them, as well as other users.
Thanks again for calling. Letha from Mercer. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. My husband and I are now retired, and it was recommended that we get a new printer. The one that we have has not been used since last August or so. So the color cartridges have all gummed up and inked up the system.
What's the manufacturer of the?
The system is an Epson.
Okay.
And it was recommended that if we don't need to print color anymore,
right,
then what would you recommend for a black and white type of a situation for our computers?
There are three different companies that I know of that probably make laser printers, which are, you know, they load them up with like black powder or black toner.
Yes.
Samsung, Brother, and HP.
Okay.
You're typically going to find Samsung and Brothers probably at a lower price point, but they typically use... they have a separate toner feature, and then they have a drum component.
Okay.
So you may pay less for the toner than you would for like an HP.
Okay.
But the HP unit typically has the toner and the drum in one component. So their solution is going to be more expensive when you go to replace it, but you only have one thing typically to replace.
Yeah.
Okay.
Over the life of the system.
Okay.
Excuse me, but... To save yourself some money, what I would do is look at compatible toners. I personally like spending a fraction of the price of buying compatible toners than buying name brand toners. And
all right.
Even if one of them fails,
yeah.
You're still spending in the long run, you know, a lot less money than buying the name brand stuff. That's just
okay.
My personal preference.
There you go.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yep,
thank you
luck.
For calling. And let's
and
go
she,
to, yeah.
She was right that the Epson solution, and, you know, I don't want to analyze all the printer solutions,
yeah.
But the HP design of the inkjet system is that when you replace a color, you're replacing not only the color but the printhead, so therefore
yeah.
They're more expensive.
Yeah.
So you could technically get a refill system that would allow you to refill the ink in that print cartridge and you still have the old printhead in it. But if you're having a problem with it with an HP
yeah.
system, you're replacing that whole thing, that problem's typically going to go away.
Yeah.
In an Epson solution, it's the print head or the print function mechanism is in the printer itself and is not replaceable. So if you do have ink in that system and you don't use it and it gunks up, trying to clean it may not actually work. And she is correct that you may yeah. actually have to get a new printer. So
there you go. And Kevin in Minocqua, it's your turn. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. Yesterday morning, I was in the middle of a crossword puzzle on the Washington Post, and my screen suddenly went black for a second. It came back up, and the graphics were all messed up. I suspected I might have a virus. I shut the computer down, ran it in safe mode, and found a virus, thought I got it off, started up the computer. The same thing happens about every 35, 40 seconds. I get a black screen. I'm wondering if the virus repopulated itself or if maybe the something's going wrong with my laptop.
Interesting situation. Let's see. Some viruses can morph to something else so that they're not detectable. You know, they've basically reseated themselves on the system. One of my tips on my tips page goes over how to look and see if you have some stealth programs running on your system. I don't remember them all by heart, but I think the last tip that I have on my tips page goes over the tools that you can use which identify what's running on your system. That's a possibility. You could see if you want to try and update the graphics driver on your computer and see if for some reason maybe it created a problem with that file that's on your system. So if you redo the graphics driver and see if that helps, you know, fix it, that's a possibility. The other thing is you might, if you're using which version of Windows are you using?
XP Pro.
If you haven't installed anything that's been, that required a lot of work on your part, if you use the system restore feature, if this is something that's happened in the last, two or three days, you might want to go back to system restore.
Yeah,
and access.
I haven't added anything to it. It's just
okay.
Cropped up.
So if you've,
I'm wondering, am I going to be chasing a phantom virus, or is there some hardware that's starting to go flaky?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. If you use System Restore and go back to a prior date to when you had the problem, so you pick an access point for doing the System Restore and see if the problem goes away, then you know it was probably an infiltrator
yeah.
that got onto your system. If the problem still exists, even after you did the System Restore, then it
yeah.
could be something that's starting to flake out, which means that maybe updating the driver might help, may not help. So
yeah.
it's kind of like, trying to deduce which where the problem's coming from.
Yeah. So do that system restore and see what happens then.
Yeah.
Good luck.
You won't lose any data.
No.
It has no effect on your data files.
Thanks again for calling. And let's go to Dick in Cross Plains next. Dick, hi to you. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. This problem now exists. Probably the last time it was working okay was sometime last fall. I'm trying to tidy up my photographs, and I have two hard drives, both of which seem to be working okay. I've got an 80 gig that's not the boot drive, and I was using Select to pick all my JPEGs off my main regular drive, and I was going to copy them to the 80 gig drive. I didn't expect to be able to do all of them at once, but I used to be able to copy a few hundred JPGs between folders or so on and so forth on at least one drive. However, when I try to copy, I go through and I select, say, 300 or 400 or even a couple of hundred JPEGs out of the search results and try to copy them to the other drive, it doesn't work. It says cannot read from the source drive, but if I just pick 50 or 60, it works. But since I've got about 20,000 JPEGs out there, I don't want to go through and just...
50 at a time.
Yeah, right. I don't want to copy 50 at a time, and I'm wondering why I can't copy several hundred at a time like I used to be able to.
One possibility might be that it's having a problem with one of the files, which is then creating a roadblock for all of them. So that's a possibility. Yeah. The other thing is, what operating system are you using on the computer?
XP Pro, and it's all up to date.
Okay.
Terms of service, you know, SPs and all that kind of stuff.
I believe the program is called TerraCopy. It's a free program for
Terra.
I'm not sure if it's with one or two.
Okay.
But, you know, this is another one where you could probably go to, like, CNET and do a search on it, or large file copies or large number of file copies. But I think it's called TerraCopy. It's a free download, and it will basically give you a monitoring screen of how the progress of your file copies is going. So versus looking at how Windows does file copy, which is basically throwing a little starburst at you,
yeah,
you know, how it just kind of floats and says, boom, you know, a little, I don't know if you want to call it a starburst. You know what I'm talking about. TerraCopy gives you some little status information.
Okay.
So it might give you some better success at trying to not only get it done, but seeing what's going on with it.
There you go.
In the past, when I copied large number of files, I was doing it within the same drive, between folders or something like that.
Okay.
The fact I'm trying to hit a different drive, possibly a problem?
Shouldn't be.
I wouldn't think so.
But what you could also do, what I would probably do is, if you haven't done this, is probably do a system defrag on your drives.
So, it says it doesn't need it, and I've also done the disk check, and it says
okay.
It's
okay. So it all says it's okay.
Yeah.
There might, you know, I've had it where when you highlight a large number of files and one of the files has a problem, it just kind of gives a message that, hey, this ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
So there might be one file that's got a bit that's off. Because go back to the basics in what files are made of. Everything in the computer communicates through a series of on-off switches, which are dictated through zeros and ones. If one little file gets crunched, so a zero isn't a zero, it's
a one,
or it's not a one, or it's in the wrong place, or it's a file check that basically says this is messed up, it could have a domino effect.
Yeah.
So that might very well be the case in what your experience is, a domino effect.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. But an email from Walt. I get spam emails every day from very annoying places such as SmartDate. Blocking the address and even blocking the domain does no good. I'm using Windows Live Mail and Windows 7 Professional. How do you get off?
One thing I would try to do is check with your internet service provider. And a lot of them have put spam filters in place. And see if you can tweak the spam filter on their end so that the stuff that you're getting, you know, is a lot less than what you have right now, obviously.
Yep.
Because there are a lot of, I've noticed this over probably the last 5 years, that a lot of internet service providers have put in their own spam filters, but they don't want to crank it up by default because they don't want to filter out what might be good mail. So yeah. If they put it out there, but they didn't tell you, or maybe they told you, but it was so subtle that you just ignored their email. Oh, they're trying to sell me something.
Yeah.
But maybe they turned it on, but by default, they don't want to crank it up so high that you don't get any email. And then you go, what's going on here? So, you know, you might want to explore that, kind of looking under the hood with your internet service provider and see if they done you a favor, put a spam filter tool out there that you just have to tweak. I've had a situation where someone was sending me email, or at work, someone's sending email from the other end. Everything was capitalized. So their whole email address is capitalized. Well, the spam filter said, hey, that's spam, just because their email address was all capitalized. So you just have to be aware that there are little tweaking things like that that can get in the way.
Sean in Wilson, Michigan, we go to you next. Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I am calling about trying to speed up my computer a little bit. I would like to take my pictures and maybe my music and put them on either a flash drive, a CD, or a DVD just to free up some space. And I'm wondering what you recommend, which one would hold the longest, and how long can I expect the pictures to stay on these without going bad?
Oh, boy. Okay. Flash drives, they come in all different sizes now. They come, you know, 512 meg, 1 gig, 8 gig, 16 gig, 32, 64, 128, 256. But you have memory limitations in terms, you might have access limitations in terms of operating systems, you know, what's compatible with those. So you might have to install different drives or how the drive is prepared. So that's one issue. In terms of DVDs, the largest capacity DVDs are those dual-layered. I believe they're just, you know, somewhere between 8 and 9 gigs on a dual layer, but you need a dual-layer drive in order to prepare the media, plus you need the right media to do that. You know, I don't know the longevity of, you know, in terms of storing a DVD, but, you know, it's got to be kept in a clean environment, you know, if you're trying to archive those. You might want to look at solid-state hard drives, which are larger versions of flash drives. That's a possibility. You could also look at portable hard drives that are spinning, but they're typically, you know, meantime between failure, they're rated fairly high, but they have moving parts. But if you're using it for archives, so you get, you know, multiple ones, 500 gig to 1 terabyte portable hard drives are in the price range of $50 to $100. And they plug into USB ports. The high-performance ones are you going to use the external SATAs. Some might use FireWire. So depending on what computer you're hooking it up to, whether or not you have a USB port or you have an eSATA port, or you could add one to the computer. So you've got options there. But just don't rely on one media to be your backup.
Yeah.
You know, put it on a large capacity thumb drive, burn a number of DVDs, burn a couple of, and put them in different places.
Yep.
You know, don't put all your eggs in one basket.
And how do you, we've got a caller with a, or an emailer with a very old Mac, so old it doesn't have a CD burner, only a floppy drive. Wants to recycle the computer and wants to get the data off.
Uh-huh.
And can you give them an answer in about 30 seconds or so?
Well, you know, the data, you could use an archiving program and then email it to yourself and then just verify it when it gets to the other end, what you have. And then, you know, if you have to wipe the drive clean, there are utilities to wipe the drive clean, or you could take it out and, if you want to make it completely unusable, stick it next to a magnet, and that'll really mess up that hard drive permanently.
There you go. And, Pete, we are
out of time. It flies by so fast.
It went
just
by
like that Super Bowl time.
And you're
but
back,
we get to enjoy that for a long time, though, till next year.
Till next year, at least. And you're back the first Monday of every month now, so you're back on the March 7th.
Yep,
when it's probably warmer. Peter Greed of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. He'll be back March 7th. Taking a look ahead after 11 tomorrow, we'll be talking fishing and hunting with Gary Engberg. There's still a lot of winter left. Gary has some ideas how to make the most of it. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.